Philly Bucks. Philly is heading back to a scene of a playoff crime. Why is Sirianni public enemy number one?
And make no mistake about it, he is at 2-1, coming off a road win against New Orleans, who had scored almost 50 points per game in their first two. And on WIP, our affiliate station, Pat, they hate this guy. They think he's a horrible coach that this team is being held back by. I mean, it's crazy. And the thing I keep hearing there, the narrative is we have fired better coaches than Nick Sirianni. We fired Andy Reid. We fired Doug Peterson. We can fire Nick Sirianni. Let's go get Bill Belichick. Let's bring somebody else in there. My theory on why this is the case, the guy was a very outwardly cocky, kind of arrogant, like, I'm here. I'm not going to be one of these more respectful coaches that always just builds up the opponent and on the sideline is very demure. No, like, he gets into it. He plays to the camera. He makes faces. He yells at the other coaches. And I think Philly loved that at first because that matches their personality. Mm-hmm. But when you stop winning, when you collapse like last year, and then these wins this year, you're needing either last second plays, mistakes by the other team. You're doing some questionable game management things where fans are sitting on their couch who play Madden and they're saying, I would have done it differently. This is really the assignment when you play in Philadelphia. They are the hardest fan base in professional sports to please. I think they're even more ruthless than Cowboys fans. Because I think Cowboys fans at this point don't even expect to win. They kid themselves or trick themselves doing it every year. And then they know that they're going to get let down. Mm-hmm. These Eagles fans are monsters. And they're trying to run this guy out of town. And it's crazy because I don't think he's that bad of a coach, Pat. I honestly don't. I think he made bad coordinator decisions last year. But I think overall, he's done a pretty good job. And I expect it to continue this week. I think they go back to Tampa where they lost in last year's playoffs and they get a win against Baker Mayfield and the Bucs.
Yeah, I think they get a win as well. But also, it's hard to survive in Philly. Like you said, they definitely have the hardest fan base to please in sports, if that's basketball, hockey, football. But it doesn't matter what sport it is. If you're a fan of Philly sport, you are probably the number one most ruthless fan in sports. You know, so it's hard to please those fans there. I do think Nick Sirianni is a solid coach. The teams that he's been able to, you know, orchestrate and put together, except for last year. I know they had a little meltdown last year, but for the most part, they have always been a competitive team year in and year out. I know Philly wants championship year in and year out, but sometimes it just don't work like that. And also, the grass is not always greener on the other side.
But I feel like the other thing is, I feel like the players hear it. I don't know. Like, I feel like the players get affected by it where they almost feed into it. And then there's like infighting and like they kind of turn into characters in like this soap opera that goes on there. I mean, it's almost like they can't completely ignore it. So when they hear the fans arguing and getting on coaches and players, it's like they get affected by it too, Pat.
What's that? The outside noise starts to creep in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, these are humans we're talking about. They don't live in caves or under rocks.
Yeah, I can see that happening. I can see that happening. But I never really played around a fan base like the Philadelphia Eagles. So can't really speak on that experience. But I will say this, going to, you know, playing there, you know, multiple times, their fans will definitely let you hear about how they're feeling.
Broncos and Jets. We have not touched on the Hassan Reddick holdout at all. He got traded from Philly to New York, and he's carried this into the season. Pat, what is this guy doing?
I have no idea. And it's going to be very intriguing to see how that ends up panning out, because I don't know what the dollar amount is right now, but I'm sure it's, you know, past $2 million as far as in fines, you know, so I don't know if they're even close. We haven't heard anything about any conversations, you know, at this point. Now we're going into week four. So at this point, if he's holding out, he might as well just hold out the entire season and just continue collecting those fines. I mean, unless you have a plan in place and you're good with paying those fines and hopefully, you know, everything works out for you next year, or hopefully you get the deal that you want this year, which I don't necessarily see happening at this stage of the season. I believe the last time I've seen this happen was, I want to say, the running back from Houston.
I can tell you I lived it with Le'Veon Bell. He did this.
Yeah, Le'Veon Bell did do this. But he ended up coming back, correct?
No, he was going to, and then at the last second decided not to, and he skipped an entire year, and then the Jets paid him.
And then that's when the Jets picked him up.
And, Pat, he was never the same player.
Yeah.
He wasn't.
Yeah, when you're making these type of decisions, man, like I said, you hope that the guy who is going through this situation, that he has, you know, good people in his corner that's advising him the best way that they can to make sure that he capitalized. Because, like you said, Le'Veon, he was never the same player. And he still was Le'Veon was year eight, if I'm not mistaken, year seven, somewhere in there.
I think it was less than eight. He had four, five, six. It would have been either a sixth or seventh year.
So he still had a lot of tread, you know, a lot of tread on the tire. You know, he was just unfortunate, you know, that he sat out that year and did not come back as the same Le'Veon that we all got used to seeing. Maybe it could have been a system as well. You know, it could have been a variety of different things on why, you know, Le'Veon wasn't able to.
The Reddick thing. Here's the part about the contract that I think most fans who aren't either Jets fans or don't follow this part of football don't really maybe understand. Mm-hmm. So much of his salary got switched into a signing bonus. Mm-hmm. So he got so much money up front that when he got traded to the Jets, there was such a small amount of money on his annual salary. Like, it's almost vet minimum, Pat, in terms of his in terms of his season pay. Wow. So the Jets only owe him like $1 million. So he's probably like, I already got this money in a signing bonus. I'm not going to put my body on the line for just $1 million this
year. Right. Yeah, it don't make sense.
And I get that part of it, man. But when you miss this much season, when you're healthy, for a team that, you know, is competing for potentially a Super Bowl, like, I don't know. I think both parties have to take some of the blame. Maybe not 50-50. More the Jets than I think Reddick. Mm-hmm. But I do think that this has a chance to hurt his career productivity in the long run. And if you're in New York, why the heck are you trading for a guy unless you're completely sure he's going to sign a long-term extension with you? You're just asking for it.
Yeah.
In that situation.
Yeah. Seeing how this situation unfold, it was kind of weird to see that the Jets trade for a guy, understand his situation. They understand the situation that he's in, arguably one of a top five, you know, pass rusher in this league. You know, he's going to come in and ask for more money. So
yep,
they kind of dropped the ball on their end.
100%.
You know, not expecting him to
come. And I think at some point it's going to bite them. I don't know when. It probably won't be this week against Denver, but they're going to get to a game where they don't have a pass rush, and people are going to say if they had gotten Reddick done, they would have had a better chance to win this game.
Well, they don't have a pass rusher now, so.
Fair enough. True.
Fair enough. All right, we got the Patriots and the 49ers. This can possibly be a bounce back game for the 49ers, but the 49ers are dealing with a lot of injuries.
Yep.
Do you think, with all of the stars out for the 49ers, do you think this enhances Brock Purdy's opportunity to be great, or you think this exposes Brock Purdy flaws?
So the record is 1-2, and if you're not watching the games like we do for this podcast, or at least I attempt to do, you would say, oh, Brock Purdy doesn't have these guys. This is why he was Mr. Irrelevant. He's a product of the system. Mm-hmm. I got to be honest with you. From what I've seen, Pat, my respect for him has actually gone up here. I think he's played well. Now, the Minnesota game was a tough one, but I didn't think it was his fault that they lost the Rams game. I put that game on their defense. Yeah. I actually think, given everybody that's out, it's interesting. When they have all their stars there and they win, he's looked at as a guy that is just along for the ride. Mm-hmm. Now I think he actually has a chance to prove to people that he really is a legit top-flight quarterback. And from what I've seen, I'll say it again, the record's 1-2. But I don't think he's the problem there whatsoever. I think he's played like a top 10 quarterback through the first three games this year.
Yeah, I think the defense, in my opinion, have been the one that needs to pick up the slack. I thought the defense definitely let that game go against the Rams, giving up a 10-point lead late in that ball game. Minnesota just completely just shredded the defense up and down the football field. We know it's still young in the season. They just got a new defensive coordinator, so there's some, you know, figuring out that they're going through right now as a defensive unit. But for the most part, I think, you know, their defense is leaking, and they're going to have to look themselves in the mirror to get back to the style of play that we're accustomed of got used to seeing by, you know, beating up the quarterback.
So, are you a Purdy believer?
Say it again.
Are you a Purdy believer?
Not just yet. I want to see if he's able to do, and he has been playing some solid football. But like you said, the record is 1-2 without the stars. When the stars are there, I won't guarantee it, but I believe their record will be a little bit better than what it is now. They'll be at least three. They can be either 3-0 to 2-1, not 1-2, third in the NFC West right now.
The thing that we would do all the time on this podcast last year with Danny is I would name, or he would name, random guys, and we would say, if they were in San Francisco's offense, would this dude do just as well?
Mm-hmm.
And because we were trying to get a gauge on just how good Purdy was in a vacuum on his own. And so, like, for example, the guy we watched tonight, if you put Daniel Jones in the 49ers offense, would they have still been a Super Bowl contender last year, Pat? Is it that quarterback friendly?
It is quarterback friendly. Oh,
you're,
man.
Thinking about it, man.
I was not expecting that.
But see, look, man, even without answering that question right away, mm-hmm. It still speaks to the skepticism in Purdy.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, because, and Danny did this all the time last year, he would say, all right, go put Brock Purdy in Buffalo. Are they as good with him operating that offense with? No, they're not. Mm-hmm. Clearly not.
Right.
So that's the issue Purdy runs into, is that as long as Kyle Shanahan is the coach there and they have stars, he's not going to get credit, because people like me are going to think that there's like 20 quarterbacks in the league that could go there and put up big numbers. All right, NFC North matchup. This is a really good one between the Packers and Vikings. 2-1 versus 3-0. And it's a game that's been made much better by the trash talk here between Jair Alexander and Justin Jefferson. Jair Alexander in week 17 2 years ago was doing the gritty dance after he held Jefferson to just one catch. And Jefferson came out this week and basically said, we'll see who's going to be doing the gritty after this one. You played corner. It is a mental game, Pat. But if you're Jair Alexander, why are you poking the bear with the best wide receiver in football? Why do that? Why give him more material?
You know, I had opportunity to be a part of those matchups, you know, for 2 years. You know, so those two, or Jair and Justin, is always a fun matchup, and it's always bulletin board material each and every time they have an opportunity to match up across from each other. But they're playing in Green Bay. It's early this year. I expect Justin to have a really, really big game, just because Coach Kevin O'Connell does a really good job of moving Justin around. So Jair will have his opportunities, you know, lining up across Justin, but he's going to be moved around so much throughout the course of the game. It's going to be hard to, you know, pinpoint exactly where his position is going to be. But this matchup, man, it's going to be much watched TV Sunday. What is it, 1 o'clock game, I'm assuming, 12 o'clock game.
What do you think is the motive or the reason why, if you're the corner here, you'd want to try to get under Jefferson's skin?
I don't necessarily think it's getting up under his skin. I believe that Jair, you know, he believes in his ability.
Oh, he's pumping himself up by saying that.
And this is not the first time. You know, there's guys that do that. I won't necessarily say that they need that, but there's certain guys that do that, that feel the need to do that to help them, you know, play better in that ball game. You know what I mean? I don't know if it's putting pressure on them or that's just their style of play, whatever the case may be. But Jair, he's never been shy to talk about what he's going to do in the football game.
If I were O'Connell, I'd love it. I'd be putting that up. I'd be playing that over and over again to Justin Amelia. You hear this? You see what he said? Be ready.
I'm sure Justin saw it, so I don't think.
Oh, he saw it all right. Yeah. I would just keep reminding him of it to try to get him even more fired up. Go for about 250 and 3 touchdowns on Sunday.
Yeah, well, it's going to be a good one. I expect Justin to have at least a touchdown and 95 plus.
Okay.
Yeah, so we'll see how that end up unfolding. The Saints and the Falcons. This is going to be a really, really good divisional game. Do you think this is why Atlanta signed Kirk Cousins for this type of matchup?
Yeah, of course. And I expect him to come through. I'm not like a total guy that worships at the church of Kirk Cousins and says that the playoff defeats are not his fault or complete bad luck or out of his control or anything like that. But I do feel like the guy probably at this point maybe takes too much hell or takes too much of a beating than he deserves. It's Desmond Ridder and Taylor Heineke to Cousins. I mean, it's such a huge upgrade for Atlanta, a team that really, since Matt Ryan was closer to the prime of his career, has just struggled so badly at that position. So, you know what it is, Pat, more than anything else with him, that as I try to suss this out, I just kind of like him now. I don't know if it was watching that quarterback documentary series and I'm seeing that his wife shopping at Kohl's for him and everybody's got the Toomey suitcases and this guy like got his at Costco, you know, like it's just, I never expected that I would be, that the humanization of Kirk Cousins would make him more likable in my mind, but that show did, it worked. The whole, I guess that was probably part of the point of it, was to make you fall in love with the guy to some degree. And so I root for Kirk Cousins. I want him to play well in this game. And I do believe that he will in the end be the difference in that NFC South. He'll end up being the best quarterback in that division this year. Better than Andy Dalton in Carolina, obviously. Better than Derek Carr in New Orleans. And I think even better than Baker Mayfield in Tampa. So I guess that means put me on the Kirk Cousins bandwagon coming off the Achilles injury, Pat. I like him. I like him when he puts that chain on and he starts dancing and saying you like that after wins. I'm a fan.
Yeah, you know, I've been a fan of Kirk, you know, for a while. Been his teammate, you know, for 2 seasons there in Minnesota. What a remarkable guy. He's a winner. I know, just like you said, he gets a lot of flack about not winning in primetime games, not winning in the playoffs. But a lot of that stuff, I know he's the quarterback. A lot of the wins and losses fall on his shoulder. But at the same time, as a team, you know, we had to play better. We need to play better in order for us to, you know, get those wins, especially in the playoffs.
You know, I just feel like he's gotten tight in some of those moments, Pat. And I don't want him to be tight in those moments. I want him to come through now.
And the time is now. And a lot of people, you can say that, you know, guys have gotten tight in those moments, but that necessarily don't be the case. I mean, It just sometimes the ball don't fall your way.
I know, but when he's checking the ball down to Hockenson on third, on fourth and long with the game on the line, I'm like, what are you doing here?
Trust me, I was on the sideline. So I know what you're talking about. That
moment, it's like you can't go there with the ball.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a questionable decision, but I mean that's like for an example, going back to when he lost, what was it against Green Bay when he was in Washington?
Yeah.
That solid playoff win. Aaron Rodgers just outplayed him. He didn't play terrible in that game. You know what I mean?
Was also in Washington, so it was a miracle that they were even in the playoffs, given the history of that franchise.
So I just feel like you just get the bad end of the stick sometimes in the playoffs, man. Because he's a damn good quarterback. The stats says it all. His winning percentage says it all. Now he just have to go and win, you know, the most important ones, and that's in the playoffs.
And I think it starts with the Falcons this year beating New Orleans on Sunday.